part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part.
Fanboy.com. I saw you were watching the Bond films.
I am. I have had that Blu-ray compilation for years and years, and every once in a while I'll like watch a couple or something, but I don't think I've seen all of them. Okay. And my brother-in-law last year, like during the pandemic, he started watching them. And, you know, he was like making his list and he watched all of them. And he is a man of endurance because he does not need sleep. He's able to put his kids to bed and stay up and watch. Like, I kind of have had to like break them in half, you know, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, they're long. I mean, they're long movies.
Yeah. They're like 2 hours long, each one. And which is fine, because I guess back in the day, you know, it was like a bang for your buck. You were going to the movies. There wasn't. Internet. I'm not saying there wasn't much else to do, but. You know, didn't have like media everywhere, right? So, but it's interesting because I mean, the first two were a slog, man. Like Dr. No, From Russia with Love is like really not good. And somebody has already gotten on me on Facebook for being like, you're in a bad mood or something when you want. And I was just like, no, it's a bad, like, it's not good. Like, it's just not good.
Yeah.
Like, by any, I mean, I think even by, like, I love, like, old movies and, like, you know, I can watch an old Hitchcock or an old, you know, good film. And even though I know it's dated or, you know, the things, but, like, From Russia with Love is slow. And finally, I got to Goldfinger and I was like, oh, here we go. This is it. Like, I get it now. Like we're in, you know, like Dr. No was okay, but it was very slow. And my daughter watched it with me. And she was like, oh, she's just like, really, Dad? She's like, this is like, kind of not just the sex stuff and like all the dopey, you know, she was many severe eye rolls. And I was like, yeah. Well, you know, we're way past that now, but
yeah. I've seen all those movies so many times. It's not even funny.
Oh, wow.
But it's probably been like 10 years since I've actually really like watched them.
Yeah.
And, you know, cause in college they were always, I remember during finals, TNT or TBS, they always had them on TV.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, that's like, anyway, and as a kid I used to watch them, but I watched a couple, some of the later ones, I want to sit like what you're doing and go through them again, but I watched some of the later ones and they were painful.
Yeah. I mean, the Pierce Brosnan stuff or the Roger Moore stuff?
The Pierce Brosnan stuff.
Yeah.
GoldenEye was pretty good still. GoldenEye holds up pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
But the other stuff was just like a parody of itself.
Yeah, yeah.
The later Roger Moore stuff is painful.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's, you know, horrible.
His earlier stuff is it's fun. But it's also problematic, you know, like every Bond film. But
yeah.
And the Dalton ones, I think, you know, I posted on your thing. The Dalton ones are, he really is great. He's kind of like the proto Daniel Craig, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
But those movies are just boring.
Yeah. I remember.
There's just no scope.
I think I saw, he only did like two or three, right?
Two. He did two, yeah.
Two, right? Yeah. And I think I saw them both in the theater. And I remember seeing the first one and being like, whoa, this is different. Like there's something off, you know? And I was definitely one of those people who was like a fan of like Remington Steele. And media was like, oh, he was almost Bond, but he couldn't be Bond. And I was like all for that. So I think at the time I was very much like, I wanted like Pierce Brosnan to be James Bond like so badly.
Everybody did, yeah, at that time, yeah.
Like I had a personal stake in it or something. Like it was.
No,
like,
I remember that time. Everyone thought it was going to be him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So great.
Funny.
Yeah. But I remember it was very different. And then when they first came out, I was like, like, what is this? Like, I don't think people were not ready for it. And they didn't know. I think a lot of the public didn't know what the books were. I remember somebody, because I would have been young at that point. It probably still would have been high school and or just coming out of high school. And somebody being like, no, this is like what Bond is like in the books. Like, he's a hard ass and he's not this like bon vivant, you know, like charming, like walking through, you know what I mean? He's got a scar on his face. And I was like, really? Yeah. Like, I had no idea. Yeah. So Daniel Craig came along at the exact right time. Yeah. I think.
Because if you go from like View to a Kill, which is like total Euro trash. Like I mean, it's the ultimate Euro pop, like, you know what I mean? And then you go from that to whichever one it was, License to Kill or Living Daylights. It's like, holy, you know, it's like night and day. It's not even the same character.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And it was like they were trying to reinvent it at that time. And they probably felt like they needed it, but I don't think the public was ready. They just weren't. They just weren't. So in any case, we're not here to talk about James Bond, Stephen.
We're not. We're here to talk. What are we here to talk about again?
We're here to talk about your comic, my friend. Your comic, which I severely enjoyed.
Oh, thank you.
And it's called Monster Matador. Wait, what is this chapter's like subheading? What are we calling it? Monster
Afripocalypse.
Afripocalypse. Okay. Yeah. I have it here on my tablet to the side, but my tablet was acting up, so I couldn't look at it.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, yeah.
Afripocalypse. And wait, so when does the Kickstarter launch, my friend?
Tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow. So on Monday. Oh. Yeah, yeah. I got some work to cut out.
Well, I was going to say, if you want to drop it later in the week, that because there's one or two dropping tomorrow.
Okay.
Then there's something dropping Tuesday. That way I can promote it like on its own.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That's what I've been telling people, to kind of spread it out, because otherwise if I have like five drop in one day, it's like,
sure.
I you know, they're all in one lump and it's like, it's not really going to.
Well, that works for me. I've got a horror movie that I can post up on Monday, so that's fine. That's fine, because in October we like to talk about horror movies.
Yeah.
But it's Monster Matador Afri. Go ahead.
It's tongue twister. Afripocalypse.
Afripocalypse. And I just reread it this morning, and I loved it. I think it's great. I mean,
thank you.
And it's going to be on Kickstarter when this podcast goes up, which will be the Wednesday of this week then, since you've given me permission to hold back. But I loved it. This is great. I mean, this is like, well, I love your book. I you know, and I've had you on the podcast several times talking about it. But I mean, usually, I mean, it's a bit of a shift, right? From like what you usually do. And is this only a one shot?
This is, are we doing the interview now?
Yeah, we're doing everything.
Oh, we're doing the interview. Look at that.
Yeah, we just jump right in. It's a conversation, Stephen. It's a conversation. It's not an interview. It's a chat.
Cool. I didn't realize that. Okay. this is a one shot. So we did something. So Kickstarter.
Say that my name is Christian Horn and this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. I didn't do that. But anyway, go on.
That's why I got lost. Okay. And I'm Stephen Prince. I am the writer and creator of Monster Matador.
Yeah. It's early Sunday morning. So we're a little out of it.
Very early. And just to get it out of the way, it's a post-apocalyptic kaiju throwdown about a matador who fights monsters to make a better world for his daughter.
Yeah. No. And it's. Another great chapter. Why don't you remind people who the artist is on this? Because
the artist is Ringo Award nominee Fabio Alves, who he's known for his book Banjax, which won some Ringo Awards. He does The Jump. Both of those books he does with Ryland Grant.
Yes.
He's currently also doing variant covers for the smash hit Suicide Jockeys from Source Point Press.
Nice.
That is currently in comic shops.
Nice. Nice.
And our colorist is Alex Zieff, who is an incredible colorist from Mexico City. She's been with us from the beginning, and she is currently also the colorist on another Source Point Press hit book, Cult of Dracula.
Oh, that's right. And we just had Cult of Dracula creator
Richard Davis.
Yeah, we just had him on for the Dracula.
His artist, Puis Calzada, was actually he did a variant cover for me. So
that's great. That's so, yeah. Awesome.
I find talent before.
No, that's great. No, Cult of Dracula, you know, all of Ryland Grant's books are great. This book is great. I mean, it's very much like, it very much is, seems to me like Predator meets Night of the Living Dead. Well, I don't want to spoil anything because I was going to say something else, but I'll leave it at that. But yeah, no, this is a really fun book. I mean, your love for 80s action movie cinema very much comes out in this, and it moves along at a really good pace, unlike the first two Bond movies.
That's right, which we talked about.
Yeah.
This was, you know, you asked about it's a 64 page one shot.
Yeah.
So one of the things that like always, I mean, and this is a personal thing, it's not like a criticism or anything, but you know, with Kickstarter, we did Tango of the Matadors, which was our initial miniseries.
Yeah.
And we started that in June of 2020. And one of my goals was to have these books out like clockwork because I didn't want people waiting for the next book, you know? Sure. But Kickstarter is a weird thing because I guess what I've learned is that people don't necessarily mind waiting 2 years between books.
I guess so.
I really wanted to get the book out. I wanted to kind of like, you know, show the audience that we were committed to this and, you know, this was, you know, we're serious about it. And, you know, we got the 3 issues out within like a year, you know, we did Kickstarters every 4 months or so.
That must've been brutal
and,
for you.
In this new one, I got tired of waiting for the next book.
Sure.
But also doing, 3 Kickstarters a year is just like, it's killer.
Yeah. I can't imagine.
So I thought, let's try something different this time. We'll do a 64-page one-shot.
Yeah.
So it's a done-in-one. You get the entire story here. It's a more bang for your buck. You know, you're not having to pledge over 3 campaigns, so you're saving money on it. And you know, the pace of it, one of the things is you know, when you're structuring something for, you know, 3 issues or six issues, you know, you're pacing things differently.
Yeah.
So for this one, because it's 60, you know, it's 64 pages, and you only have, you know, you have a, you know, a limited amount. You really want to get things moving. And I was telling someone the other day, I was kind of taking some inspiration from The West Wing.
Uh-huh.
You know, everyone always says about The West Wing and Aaron Sorkin's writing is you know, it's walking and talking.
Yeah, yeah.
So in this one, it's a lot of like, you know, fighting and talking.
Yeah.
When they have to talk. You know, the story moves. Like, we don't stop for exposition. We don't stop to, like, you know, take a break and whatever. It's almost designed like a gauntlet, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really high-octane, action-packed, so.
Yeah. And, no, I mean, it moved along at, like, a really good pace when I was rereading it this morning, and there's a lot of, like, action and, you know, quippy comments back and forth between all the players and stuff like that, and it was really good because I felt like, it's funny. I mean, I always wonder how these things play out for people who didn't grow up or watch movies from the 80s or 90s, because so many things are like based off of like templates. And I'm not talking about your book. I'm talking about everything in media these days where it's just like, it's quick language, right? It's like quick reference. It's like, okay, I know what this guy is just by looking at them and just by a couple of sentences and stuff like that. And that definitely plays out in your book where I'm like, okay, I know what that is. And I know the Grace Jones character, or at least I think it's Grace Jones. Like, she's badass.
So I had a different template. I had a different, actress in mind.
Oh, really?
Her. Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was Grace Jones all the way. Who was it?
He did a Grace Jones. It's, influenced by Grace Jones.
Okay.
I had, I don't remember. Lupita Nyong'o.
Oh yeah. 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 Oh yeah.
That's who I said, I told him, and then he came back with Grace Jones, and I'm like, yeah, okay, come on.
Yeah. That's great.
She's, Lupita has like softer features, which I thought was really nice. Would have been a nice contrast with like how tough this character is.
Yeah.
But then he was like, no, dude, you know, I'm doing Grace Jones, like, influence thing.
That's,
it's
so
just
funny.
Like, I mean, the way he does it is just, she's so badass, you know?
Yeah.
And it actually, you know, he was right. You know what I mean? Like, Fabio, you know, in the story, it actually works well because you really believe that she can stand toe to toe, not just with a monster, but as you'll see in the book, you know, with the matador.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of tension between them. And and it really, it works, you know?
Yeah. 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 No, I mean, I think it's, I mean, obviously there are action hero templates, and I know that you used a couple, you used Ryland Grant in there, and that was great.
And, and some other people.
Yeah. Huh? And some other people. I don't know who that short guy named Hans is after. But,
so you wanna talk about that or
what?
Want to talk about that?
Or? It's up to you. I mean, I don't care. Like, but I just, it's interesting because like you fit like all these things and they all work for me reading them because I've seen the things like, I mean, we're around the same age, I think, and we've kind of grown up with the same films, and it works really well because it's like, oh, I know what this is. You know, they do the introductions and stuff like that, but like on a deeper level, you know, however deep you can get with an action sort of like jungle fight, monster fighting piece, you know, it works. Like you just peg them off one by one. And as they go through the action, you kind of like, are like, oh, I know what this dude's specialty is. I know what this person's all about. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone has their own thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, we talked about guest stars. The kind of impetus for this book and kind of how it developed was Christian, you're the co-creator of Baby Badass.
Yes.
And Dave Schrader, your other co-creator, and I were tabling together at Long Beach Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And we were talking about your book, and Dave was I was drawing a I think it was a cover for the old Matador series.
Mm.
And it was some mercenaries in the jungle. And Dave was talking about, we were talking about kind of like the genesis of Baby Badass and whatnot. And we were laughing about how you were kind of like the Bill Finger of Baby Badass. Because, you know, I mean, you know, you're kind of like the silent, you know, creator in the book. Dave's sort of, you know, been the writer and whatnot.
Yeah.
But, and your middle name, as many people may or may not know, and is Hans, because on, you know, Facebook, you're Christian Hans Horn.
Yeah, because that was what was available when I signed up for Facebook.
Right, and it was one of those things where it was just, I was drawing these things, and the name Hans and Schrader just popped into my head. Obviously, a play on Hans and Franz.
Yeah,
the old. Bodybuilder sketch from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be funny if you guys were these big action hero mercenaries, and the Schrader character, Dave, who's like, you know, 6'10" or whatever he is.
Yeah.
You know, was kind of like a cross between Werner Herzog and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, he's great.
And then we had you, you know, you were the partner, but you were kind of like the silent kind of guy who was just kind of like, yeah, you know, because of Baby Badass, you're the co-creator, but you know, Dave is like out front and center. So, so that was kind of the genesis from that. And at around the same time, I was already thinking about, because I knew I was going to kind of reboot, relaunch Matador with a new artist who ended up being Fabio. And, I thought it would be fun to use those characters, you know, as monster fighters. Somewhere.
Sure.
And then as I started developing Afropocalypse, I thought, okay, I can throw them in here. And then it just kind of developed into something that wound up being, you know, a love letter pretty much to Predator and zombies and in 80s action.
Yeah.
And with Predator, Shane Black, who's a screenwriter, has a role in that movie. They cast him in that because they wanted to, I guess, keep him on set.
That's right.
To do rewrites.
That's right.
Which he didn't want to do, so they killed him off right away. So I thought it would be fun to also cameo a screenwriter, and that's where Ryland Grant, who was generous enough to let me use him in the book, and so he's our Shane Black in this. And originally, my intent was to kill him off right away, but like what always happens when you're writing is these characters just kind of come alive in a way. And. And the relationship and the kind of the the relationship between him and you guys, the constant shit talking.
Yeah, there's a lot of, poor Ryland gets his name like thrown through the grinder at
it's
one
just
point.
Every time it's just another, it's like Franz or like Fritz, or, you know, it's just this constant like back and forth.
That's great.
It was just, you know, it just kind of grew out of that. But
yeah,
it was fun. It's a lot of fun interplay between the characters. In there.
Well, I mean, one of the things that, and I said earlier on, it's a bit of a different thing for me with Monster Matador, because usually he's fighting like big monsters and giant monsters. Yeah. And when I started reading it, I was like, oh, zombie, like a virus. Like, how are they going to deal with it? You know what I mean? And I love zombies, which you may or may not know by now. You probably do. Like, I love zombies. I love zombie movies. I love good zombie movies, not bad ones. But I just, the concept of the zombie is something that freaked me out. Even from when I was younger. And so I was like, zombies. And I'm like, zombies in the jungle. And I'm like, zombies that turn animals into zombies. Like, I was just like, this is not good. So for me, it was very much a thing where I was like, oh, cool. I'm all in. And I was very much interested to see how your character would end up dealing with something like that. Because a virus to me seems like a much more, I don't know what the word is, maybe ambiguous threat,
ambiguous existential. So it's interesting, you know, that you actually kind of bring that up, because with the monster in this, when I started writing, I didn't quite have a lock on it. One of the things with this book is that, you know, it's Monster Matador, right? It's a guy that fights monsters, fights kaiju.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you know, it's important for me, like every time I do a book, that I kind of add a little twist to it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's like, okay, we know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, and with this one, it's kind of like, it's not your typical kaiju, right? It's like you said, it's zombies, and there's like, they're looking for the source of this zombie infection.
Yeah.
And, I didn't want to use the standard tropes of, you know, when you go to Africa, there's these tribes there or hidden temple or, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to go there. I wanted to do something. So as you're reading the book, you know, hopefully you're kind of like, wait a minute, I thought I knew what this was, but wait, what is this? And like you say, it's a virus.
Yeah.
And I was actually writing this as we went into lockdown.
Oh, wow.
And sort of like, and that's when everything clicked for me in terms of what it was going to be. And it was like, well, you know, zombies, it's a virus. And it's like, how do you fight a virus? How do you fight something that you can't even see?
Yeah.
And so it was a lot of fun sort of like coming up with that and developing it, and then coming up with what the actual monster is, you know, and then leaving it kind of at the end, like, how does the matador is usually so confident going up and fighting these monsters, and now he's facing something that he's kind of not sure he can even beat. You know?
And there's also a couple of twists in there too, where it's just like, I don't want to blow anything in the story where it's like, oh, I thought I was going into this, but now I'm going into, you know, and how do we get out of this sort of thing? Or are we going to get out of this? Right.
Right. Yeah. 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 So it's a different kind of like, kaiju experience, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I said, that's something that's important to me in doing the book, is like, I never want you to feel like you're reading the same book over and over again.
Sure.
You know? Because ultimately it's, you know, he goes and fights a monster.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's the concept, right? It's like any kind of genre fiction, but you want to kind of like twist it around a little bit.
Yeah.
So, and I thought it was important to do it also for in the second one, you know, to really kind of show that, like, you know, we're not just doing, you know, kaiju every time, a bigger and bigger one or whatever. You know?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Which is kind of, cause I mean, you used to draw this book on, how many issues did you do on your own? Like, oh,
I did 12, I did like 12 issues, almost like 300 pages. Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
We talked about this a little, but when I started it, I just thought it would be cool to do.
Yeah.
I was rereading the Claremont and Byrne X-Men books.
Yeah.
And what I found so interesting about those, or actually the Claremont and Cockrum and then the Byrne ones, is how long it took that book to actually gel.
Sure.
You know, everyone talks about, oh, the Claremont X-Men. If you read that first year or so, It's kind of, you know, you can tell they're just sort of figuring it out. You know, they're really kind of like throwing things at the wall, trying to figure out who the characters are. So I thought with this, it would be fun to do just for myself a couple issues rather than like sitting down with my pen and paper, you know, and writing it out, kind of like, you know, doing a book and seeing how it develops and developing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I started doing it, and I never intended to do 12 issues, you know, which is, it's insane to do that much.
Sure.
you know, but I never intended it. And what happened was Comixology Submit had just kind of come on.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, well, you know, you should just put it on there or whatever. So I just put it on there, you know, and I was doing it. And I think I was around three or four issues. My wife was pregnant, and I thought, well, you know, we'll have the baby and then I'll relaunch it and do everything. And as you know, because you have a kid, that's not what happens.
When
you
know,
you know, just, oh, I'll have a baby and then go back to my
Right.
So what happened was we had a baby and, you know, things happened and whatever. And it just kind of like, I just didn't have the time or anything. So I just kind of kept doing it just to kind of keep it moving.
Yeah.
And we had another baby and I thought, well, after this one, since I already did the baby thing once, you know, this one's going to be a piece of cake. And you only have one, which is smart, but you know,
which is smart.
It's not a piece of cake. It's even worse because you're like, wait a minute, why the hell did I do this to myself again? So I just kept doing it. And it's essentially a 12 issue. It's one story, you know, it's like, it's a bunch of stories that it's one large story.
Yeah. And, but that's, I mean, that's what I admire about you though, is that you just kind of like kept going, you know what I mean? And it was your own thing and you were drawing it on your own. And I know we've talked about this too, where I was like, come on, Steve, I want to I want to see the old Monster Man. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's, do some side stories or put some stuff on the web. You know what I mean?
So it's like, so it's interesting. It's, that book is, you know, Fabio is night and day. It's night and day of the artist that he is.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. Of course.
So originally I was going to kind of, because on the back half of that, of the book I did, I wasn't inking. I was doing really tight pencils.
Yeah.
So the idea was that I would go back and ink them and then like connect it with the books I'm doing with Fabio. But it just doesn't, it's almost like it's such a different book, you know?
Yeah.
So it kind of, so the Fabio stuff, we're actually going to do not the next one, but the one after. It's going to be called Monster Matador, The Beginning.
Uh-huh.
And it ties into the next storyline. But we're going to go back and we're going to tell the origin of the Matador. It'll be like those 12 issues.
Oh, wow.
In a 64-page book. You know, the Matador, for story reasons, will be recounting his origin.
Oh, wow.
You know, that way you have that. You know, that way we kind of bring that in there. And then at some point I'll do something with my book. I'd like to do spinoffs and stuff, and I'd love to do another story myself.
Yeah.
Outside of like what's now the main book.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just like, it's time and like,
yeah,
it's, yeah. So, no, but it's just, yeah, I mean, you know, that's like, you know, that's the goal. I was actually talking to Dave the other day. We were texting and I was like, you know, if you and Kristen, if you want to do a spinoff Hans and Schrader, you know, because those characters, the first draft of that script, I actually had to throw out and rewrite because it was Hans and Schrader Afropocalypse.
Yeah.
That's how much fun those characters were to write. It's like literally like 20, 30 pages of like cutting room floor that I had to take out.
Oh, wow. That's
because
great.
I couldn't. Like that whole Werner Herzog meets Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No, every you should situation. Do. I mean, you don't need, I mean, whatever. It's just a name. I've worn a headband when I was younger. I was into that Johnny Depp,
did, right?
You know, Johnny Depp, Richard Grieco thing in the late 80s. Well, so
you went Stallone. I mean, Rambo, you know?
Yeah.
And the Karate Kid, you know?
Yeah, Karate Kid. That's right. Yeah, that's funny. No, I mean, you should do whatever you want as far as I'm concerned. I mean, that's great. It's just great to be, you know, it's not like I could sit there and be like, I was the inspiration. You know what I mean? It's just great to be like a little bit of a, you know, a colonel.
No, I mean,
you know,
fun. I mean, it's fun to do. You know, it's fun to do stuff like that.
Well, it's good to know. But I mean, that's sort of the thing. And as much as I love Fabio's art, and I love the book, and I love the way everything looks and stuff like that, there is a thing as I get older where I've become. I mean, one of the reasons I got into comics was because of the art, right? Like, I love art. And one of the reasons I don't create more of my own comics is because I tear apart my own art. You know what I mean? And it takes me a long time to do something that I feel comfortable with or like.
Yeah.
But as I get older, I come across like more indie creators. And I think I probably maybe like 20 years ago, like in my 20s or even in my teens, where I probably would have turned my nose up at like a lot of books and stuff. You know, if you want me to be honest, I probably would have turned up my nose at Periwinkle Puss, you know, if it came across, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I was going to be honest. So, and you know, Periwinkle Puss is a little book that I do whenever I have a chance, but, you know, now as I get older, it's interesting. I start to see things as more like it's in the doing, right? Like it is.
And you know, like I was not under any delusion, you know,
sure.
You know what I mean? It was like, I mean, and you know, I had kids that I was taking care of and whatnot, and you know, literally, like, look, if I had 8 hours a day to do the art,
sure,
it would be significantly, you know, better. But you know, you got to understand, I was doing this, and here's how I was doing this. I was doing a page every 2 days of the pencil. Every 2 days would be a page of pencils, and this was in a 2 to 3 hour period that I had every day. Only like 2 hours, you know. I would do the entire page of blue lines. You know, I would do the blue lines, and then I would do the pen. You know, and that would be, and then the next day I would do the pencils.
Yeah.
So you know, it's not like, you know, I knew what I was putting out there, and it wasn't like I was like expecting like flocks, you know, people. But you know, people discovered it, and there were people like you and people, you know, who dug it and got what I was doing and understood that. And then there were people who were like, well, but the art is not blah blah blah. And it's like, okay, you know.
Yeah.
But if you're willing to look past that, and what I found just being part of like the indie scene and whatnot, if you're willing to look past that, you're going to find some really, really fun stuff.
Yeah.
And you're going to find creators who are they're so passionate about what they're doing that they're doing something like they're doing stuff that's like it's not like it's new, like it feels fresh. You know what I mean? Because
sure.
they're not playing by like the rules. They're not trying to like do the mainstream thing and make sure all these bases are hit or whatever. They're just doing the stories that they want to read themselves. And that was like Monster Matador, the one I did, was like, no one does a comic like that. You know, it's got a weird, quirky, like, and it's like, I just wanted to read a comic that had like my sensibility to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like part telenovela, part action movie, part just like, you know, whatever. And it's the same thing when you look at Periwinkle Puss, you know, you could tell it's like you're passionate about it. You know, it's like, this is the comic that you want to do, you know, and there's something really attractive about that.
Well, I think with that first issue, there was a story that I had in my brain and it was more like, could I do this all on my own? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it suffers for that and it's good for that. You know what I mean? Like it's funny because, and I don't want to talk about my stuff too much, but when I did that first, when I finally printed up a version of that first issue, which I think you have, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I went to a convention and people who looked at it, they enjoyed it. And I was surprised. Like, I was like, you like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like it's funny because passion for that project for me is like a strong word. It was just like more like, could I do it like all on my own? Could I color? Could I ink? I wanted to ink it. You know what I mean? Whether it was, you know, and stuff like that. And that's the thing is I was able to do it and I was able to do it in a way that people seem to like. Now, obviously the pandemic happened and I was not able to, and I have not done a Kickstarter or anything because I don't have time as, you mm-hmm. know, and you and I know personal reasons, especially like in the recent past. There's a reason for that, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I've been finding as I get older, that I get drawn more towards if somebody's got something like really passionate and it's decent, then whether it's like the greatest DC or Marvel, like great art, you know, it's weird. There's this creator named Martin Eden, who I really like a lot. And he does a book called, he did something called The Omen and Spandex, okay. And he has something called Zeros. And again, not to talk about somebody else's things, but like he was one of these artists, or there's a book called Jack Staff by Paul Grist.
Oh, Jack Staff. Yeah.
That's it's part. Great. But I think a lot of people would look at the art of these books and think like, maybe, you know, if you were into something like super detailed, which it seems like that's what breaks through a lot, which good. Yeah, they obviously should, but there's something to those books that is just like, oh, and your book, that there's something special there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That is not there. And I think I finally, as I got older, kind of like started understanding the indie ethic. And then there's a whole bunch of other things as to like the preciousness of your own work and looking at old comics and looking at people like John Buscema and like maybe John Byrne and you know, maybe even Jack Kirby, where it was just like, this is just work. I don't, not that they didn't care that it looked like crap. Obviously they did their best work, but they were like, this is just work. I'm plowing through it. I got to get through it. There's deadlines and stuff like that. And keep moving, keep moving, keep moving. And, and that to me is like, oh, okay. Stop hanging on to the, you know what I'm saying? You know where I'm going?
Yeah. So, you know, it's the other thing I want to kind of bring up, and this is, you know, I created Monster Matador like initially like 15 years ago.
Wow. Yeah.
And you know, one of the other reasons I kind of kept it in my back pocket, and this just shows you how much not just the industry has changed and for the better, but at the time the reality of it was no one was going to publish a book like that.
Yeah.
With a Latino lead. And
oh yeah. Interesting, you know, point.
And not only that, one of the things in the book that, you know, I stay away from and you know, our first series, Tango the Matadors, was in, it took place in Guatemala with a old, you know, Latinx cast. When I started it, when I was doing it, we did our first four issues were in Mexico.
Yeah.
And, you know, in comics, movies, whatever, whenever you do a character like that, I was like, well, you know, I didn't want to go down the road of having to be like, oh, well, you know, let's actually have him be on vacation in the U.S., you know, when the monsters strike and team him up with the, you know, white guy who was whatever, so that we have a way to bring like, you know, the audience into the book. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So those are like other reasons. Whereas now I don't think that would be as much of a thing. Like no one would care, because now it's like, okay, these stories are actually being told with these types of characters.
Yeah.
Whereas like the crazy thing is, if you go back 10 years ago, like no one, you know what I mean? Like,
I'm half Latinx or.
No, I know. You are. Yeah.
And that's been the constant frustration amongst other issues where I'm like, can I have my Latinx Avenger now? Like, you know what I mean? Like in a country where the demographics are changing, I'm like, really? And it says a lot about the comics themselves, because like when you think about like, well, when do I get my Latinx Avenger? It's like, which one? Because there are a couple of, maybe I think there's one called like the White Tiger or something like that, and they're I think Kurt Busiek and George Perez introduced one in their run, but there's not a lot of like A-list Latinx Marvel
I did a signing at Comic Bug in Culver City last month. And someone walked in and looked at the book. He was Latino and just kind of was like, wait a minute, you know?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And he's like, what is this? And I'm like, yeah, you know, he's a Mexican matador. He's like, what? He's like, and he was talking about it. He's like, dude, I've got a friend in Oklahoma. We were just talking about this, how there's like no, like a, you know,
yeah,
like that. And he's like, you know, he pointed to the wall. He's like, look at like, you know, the wall of Marvel in DC.
Yeah.
And he's like, find me one on this wall, you know? Yeah. And I was like, oh, you know, and I didn't do it. Like I didn't do this book. I, you know, I did the book cause I love like the character and it just came out of something, but it's like one of those things that, because now I'm doing a book about a Latino character, that it's, you know, it's basically like I'm seeing it more because like I'm reading more books by Latino creators and I'm kind of, you know, keeping an eye out for that stuff because it's related to it. And one of the things is like, yeah, Marvel and DC amazingly don't really have like that, like big A-list character like that. And you're like, wow. Yeah.
Well, you look at something like Shang-Chi, right? That just came out and it's great, great movie and deservedly so. And I'm all into that. And, you know, I champion it, but I'm like, really? Like, I mean, it is, it really makes you think. And then the big joke with another friend of mine who's Latinx, the big thing is like when they do introduce a character like that, they talk like, ay caramba, or Dios mío, or, you know, stuff like that. And it's like, really, dude? Like, come on. You know what I mean? It's like, we don't, like, obviously people, you know, you had your Colossus and Nightcrawler, they had their catchphrases, you know, like, you know, whatever. Bonjour, or whatever, and you know. but I mean, I understand that there is that, but it just becomes like such a, like, you know, like Marvel has like the El Aguila or something like that, like and you know, whenever they would show up, it would be like, know, there would be like ridiculous phrases. And every once in a while you get stories that break through where it's like, you know, I guarantee you there's comic fans out there, particularly probably white guys, who was like, no, there was this story. And I'm like, yeah, but in the larger scope, where's your A-list guy? And there's no way that that doesn't exist. Yeah. There's no way that there's not an audience for that, I should say. Yeah. You know?
And you know, you bring back those things. When I was, you know, kind of doing Matador, there, you know, I was looking at things, comics, and, you know, things that like, and just looking at how, like, you know, Latinos and whatnot were in comics, Marvel. And the crazy thing is, and this is like, you know, like every single comic, especially an action comic, is that they would always go to a country and it was San whatever. You know, San Santa or El Santa or whatever. And it was a generalissimo.
There's a dictator.
Everybody was a peasant. You know, and I was just, and you know, and when you actually like, are looking at it, not just as like, oh, I'm reading an issue of whatever, but when you're looking at it as a whole, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
This is like legitimately like 90% of the way when there's like, and it's never like, so like, you know, with Matador, he's like, you know, he's a Matador, you know, like when he sees other characters, they're just people. That was like really important to me. Like, I don't want, like, you know, it's like you go to Mexico City, it's like, it's not peasants that live there. You go to like, you know, Brazil and whatever, you know what I mean? But like but then like you read a lot of the comics and it's like, it's always these like, you know, backwater South American country. And it's,
I mean,
like, oh my, and it's like, oh my God, like that's like it. That's like all you're getting. And it's like, it's crazy.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like this weird hypnosis that the US has gone under. But I mean, like, quite honestly, like that was like an issue that I was, when we were watching the Suicide Squad sequel and I was like, really?
That was, so and with then, Suicide Squad, I was like, I can't believe they went there, you know?
But the thing is they use that to talk about U.S. military policies that reduce those countries to the states. Like, obviously, like, it's so funny because, like, anytime, and here we go, we're going to get a little political here. Anytime I hear Americans like, well, why can't they clean up their own country? Why can't they pick up? And, like, you realize that it is, because we are a superpower and our policies, the drug war, like all that stuff has affected their ability to like form decent governments. And you know what I mean? Like you could get into it, but these ignorant people who are like that those, you know, Central American, South American countries just exist in a vacuum that isn't affected by what our country has done is it's just mind boggling. So the Suicide Squad, like, I gave a pass because I was like, okay, I get it.
They did kind of bring it back, but it's, what's cool now is that, there's so many, Latina creators who are doing books. And, you know, there's, I don't know if you heard Jay Gonzo, he does a book, El Mano Destino. He was on Kickstarter when I was, and he got picked up by Top Cow.
Oh, wow.
And it's Luchadors, and he's got this really cool, like, Jack Kirby style.
Okay, yeah, I think I knew who you were talking about.
Fun book. If you're into, like, role-playing, you know, Henry Barajas did Helm Grey Castle. And it's great. It's great to see those books that are, you know, from, you know, that perspective, especially. And it's like, it's like a real reflection of, like, you know, the culture, as opposed to, like, you know, the kind of tropes that we were just talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's one of the things that I appreciated about you and your book, mm-hmm. Monster Matador, that you also reach out on Facebook every once in a while. I'm like, oh, how do I phrase this? What do I do with this? Like, you know, every once in a while, because you're being very sort of like, you know, you're being conscious of like what it is that you're doing, especially from what I understand. I mean, you're not from heritage. Like, that's not your heritage, right?
No, it's not. The book, you know, it's funny, my approach to it, and my ex, my roommate, when I kind of created this, we had gone to see the movie Constantine.
Okay. The Keanu Reeves one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Beginning of the movie, it takes place in Mexico, and there's like something happens, whatever. And there's a couple, Mexican guys, and she just kind of slunk in her seat and was like, ugh. And I'm like, what's wrong? And she's like, look, and they were like, you know, just like ugly looking and like, you know, of course wearing rags and whatnot. And she's like, every time they show Mexico, she's Mexican, half Navajo, but family grew up in Imperial, and her mom has a farm there. So, and she's like, every time they show Mexico or Mexicans, it's always this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, you know, when I did Matador, and, you know, she was the one who kind of encouraged me to do it, to kind of, you know, go with it. It was always in my approach, and in the back of my head, is I never want someone of that, you know, heritage to pick up the book and have that reaction.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I never want someone to be like, ugh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I've never have. I mean, the stuff that I've read from you, I've never been like, oh, this is insulting, and, you know, in any way. I wouldn't be talking about it on the podcast. But I mean, that's the interesting thing. I mean, there is this old movie called Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. And we were talking about Shang-Chi a little earlier. And I'll never forget sitting in the movie theater. It's like one of my favorite movies. I know that it's not historically completely accurate. I know that there's a bunch of BS about Bruce Lee. Like, I get it. But as far as like the structure of a movie is concerned, I think it's great. And the message that it, you know, part of Bruce Lee's message, which is like, hey, we should be inclusive. Like, I should be able to teach what I want to teach. But, you know, there's like a scene in there where he goes with his future wife, Linda Lee, to see Breakfast at Tiffany's, and you know, the Mickey Rooney character comes out, and he's like, oh, Mrs. Go Right, you know, all that horribly, you know, forget about Mickey Rooney playing, you know, an Asian character, you know. And I just remember having this awakening in the theater and being like, oh, wait, like, that's wrong. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just being
I didn't watch that till I was older, and that was just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's like uncomfortable, you know, like really.
Yeah. No, Breakfast at Tiffany's was something in New York that they showed like all the time. Yeah. And it was on TV like all the time.
Yeah.
And like one of my favorite movies. And then it wasn't until I saw that movie and I was like, oh, like this sucks. Like that's bullshit. You know what I mean? And it sucks too, because like, again, I did love that movie growing up, and now all this stuff like, right, with Gone with the Wind, and you're just sort of like, oh, brother, you know. And it's kind of like this weird awakening that I hope continues, you know, despite people.
It has to, you know what I mean? I don't think you can turn back from that. But it's also like when you look at, I the original Shang-Chi books, they released them, and I picked up the omnibuses, you know?
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they're problematic to say the least, but the most problematic thing, and I get Marvel, like they want to be true to the original coloring and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like I could barely get through the book because like almost every Asian character is colored like literally like yellow, like a banana.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I get that's what they were originally colored, but you know, A, that was racist back then. It's just as racist now. And it's like, you know what I mean? Like these aren't like, I don't think like toning the color down.
You
know,
it's a big deal.
George Lucas has done much worse.
Exactly.
But it's like those things where like those things. Even if Shang-Chi were the most progressive and whatever book, you know, those characters are, and it wasn't, but those characters are still colored. Like,
yeah,
it's almost like you're reading the book and there's like, and it is like, they feel like inhuman. They feel alien.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And it's now is like, we're older and things are much different than they were, you know, like we're more kind of aware of that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, people have more of a voice to point those things out and not just kind of like be silent about it.
Yeah.
It really does kind of like it. I read a lot of older stuff. I watch a lot of old movies and things like that. And the stuff just stands out so much. And some of these, like, you know, you say they're like considered classics and whatnot, but like, even something I was watching, like American Pie, you know?
Oh God. Yeah. I haven't seen that in ages.
So it's just like, it's cringe. You know, one of the things in that movie that was really, and again, it's reflective of the time. Okay. It's like, everything would be like, you know, they call something, oh, that's gay, or, oh, you're being gay.
Yeah.
And if you grew up at that time, if you were, you know, of that age or whatever, that was the language, you know, that was the slang, that was everyone was using it. And it wasn't used, by most people in a way that was consciously meant to be degrading or whatnot.
Yeah.
But those things were just so normalized that you never thought past the word, you know, you never thought about the deeper meaning of the language.
Yeah.
And,
or people just didn't care. Like, yeah, let's be honest.
People didn't care too. Yeah. But I mean, but you know, the thing, you know, the difference too is like, even if you go back 20 years, you know, the difference with people being, you know, like I had gay friends and I knew people that were gay, but even people that were gay, like from high school back then or whatnot, they weren't like, they were out, you know, but it wasn't like a comfortable kind of, you know what I mean? Whereas now, like, it's like you walk down the street, you go to the park and there are two guys kissing and they're holding hands and they've got their kid on the you know what I mean? And it's like, okay, like this is like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so much.
Well, we're also in California too.
It's like, now everyone understands, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think there's definitely certain groups that understand for sure. I hope it's a wider scope, but that's what I pray for. But it's funny, like, you know, we're talking about that stuff. Like I'm doing a reread of Why the Last Man, and I'm almost done with it, but the word that keeps coming up is retard and retarded. Yes. And I'm just like, wow. Holy cow. And it's funny because I was talking to my daughter about it and I was saying like, wow, I guess we have Sarah Palin to kind of thank for that. Right. like the one good thing that she ever did in her life was like, be like, you know, that's a slur. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know what? You're right. You know?
I was, you know, I was reading an interview. I forgot which actor. It was an Asian actor. I think it was, I don't remember who. An older one, but he was saying, you know, they took those roles and they made fun of themselves in those roles. Not because, you know, it was because those were the only roles that they had to take. And they were doing that to get to the point where you can have a Shang-Chi.
Yeah, of course.
And unfortunately, the effect of that on the culture is that it made a lot of people think it was okay.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean?
So now
that it's tilted the other way, it's like, oh, you know, especially now, you know, like I said, you watch so many movies and it's just like, oh my God, some of the stuff is just like.
Well, let's talk about Dr. No, shall we?
Well, the Bond movies are a whole lot. You're either gonna.
My daughter looked at that and she was like, "Is that person supposed to be Asian? Is that person Asian?" Like she was just blown. Yeah. I mean, talk about her eyes almost like rolled out of her head. Like she was like, "This is like what is happening?" And like they couldn't even cast the lead villain like a real Asian. You know what I mean? It's just like,
I mean, Sean Connery made a career on smacking women into like having sex.
Jesus.
You know, it's like, it's insane. I mean, I love those movies, but like that kind of stuff is just like, you watch that and it's weird how normalized that was.
Yeah.
You know, for so long, because that was a trope, not just in James Bond, but in literally every movie you watch from like the 60s or 70s and even like some of the 80s, it's a woman going, no, no, no. And then the guy plants a kiss on her and she just
That's in Goldfinger.
Yes.
That is in Goldfinger.
And now you're just like, oh, that's rape.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I mean, we watched the first Rocky movie and like the way Rocky approaches Adrian, and my daughter was like, no, this isn't good. And I'm like, what the movie? It's Rocky.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're trying to be like, and then, you know, you're like, well, sometimes back in the, you kind of like, I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like people.
It's crazy. So,
but those tropes do not appear in Monster Matador though.
No, they do not.
Not at all. It's great because I mean, you've got a group of hunters and you do have some people from, you know, Africa, from the jungle or, you know, some of the fighters in there. Who are they based on? Because I was trying to figure them out. Are they like old hip hop rap stars or?
No. So with their Mandla and Zitembe, they are, they're, you know, I was kind of looking at South Africa, South African fashion and stuff like that. I wanted to give them kind of like, you know, each character has a personality, each character has a thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought it would be cool. Like, so I gave Fabio some like pictures.
Yeah.
They're not based on anyone in particular.
Okay.
But the one who's like 300 pounds, who's like the linebacker.
Yeah.
He was originally kind of, I had him as kind of like a Wesley Snipes looking guy.
Oh, okay.
And Fabio, you know, but I thought, you know, it's kind of, and at first I was like, wait a minute, you know, that's, you know, he's 300 pounds. But then I was like, you know, wait a minute. You know, why can't a 300 pound guy hunt, you know, a monster, you know?
Yeah.
And we don't talk about it, you know, you don't point, you know, it's like, he's part of the team, you know, and that again is like one of those things where it's like, yeah, you know, those are the things that are, you know, important to do, to have that kind of representation, you know?
I thought he was Fife Dog at first. Like, I was like, is that supposed to be Fife? From Tribe Called Quest.
Oh, that's a, yo, no. Wow. No. Oh, you know, I'd have to ask Fabio.
Just around the face. I don't, you know, I thought.
I'd have to ask Fabio because I didn't ask him if he actually.
Yeah. It's cool. No, I mean, either way, whatever, it worked for me. But those two characters are great. And you've got obviously the lead hunter. She's female and she's African-American she's from Africa. So she's African, right?
South African. Yeah.
South Africa. Yeah.
South African. And then there's the other Johnny James, who's the other black guy who's British.
Yeah. No, we sort of got sidetracked into a,
yeah.
But either way, I mean, I think like that's one of the things I really appreciate about your book is that you take the time to try, you're making like a really good story. And at the same time, you're trying to be very mindful of like, what these characters are like. You're doing your research and these aren't just sort of, it's funny because we talked about like shorthand in the beginning, like you look at like action movies, but at the same time, these are not the types of shorthand that you would see from those early 80s and 90s where it's just like, oh, you know, this is the black guy and it's a stereotype. Like this is very different.
Yeah. I didn't want anyone talking like a rapper, you know, like that. because it's kind of like, that's like, okay, you know, every time. That's kind of like where people go. And that's why I specifically didn't make any of them, you know, obviously it takes place in Africa. So, you know, African-American. And then I did the British guy cause I love Idris Elba, you know? And it's funny. Cause when I look at my favorite actors, it's like guys like Idris Elba. I mean, I love Chow Yun-Fat is my, you know, so it's, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I watch a lot of foreign movies, so that's.
Yeah. I wish I had more time to watch foreign movies and stuff like that. But I mean, I loved them. And when I was younger, I loved foreign films. I love indie films. I love stuff like that. And unfortunately we're just sort of like in a place now. I mean, we have more accessibility to certain things, but they tend to be the larger scope.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But
I went crazy during the pandemic and ordered like tons of Blu-rays from Hong Kong.
Yeah. Oh really?
I was like, we're never going to leave the house. I might as well.
Yeah.
There's all these like, you know, I mean, for like Chow Yun-Fat, everyone knows like, you know, the killer and Hard Boiled.
Yeah.
But there's a bunch of other stuff that like is more like the stuff that's more like targeted to like that yeah. market that doesn't.
Well, we only get like the stuff yeah. that kind of breaks through, right, to our sensibilities. Yeah. yeah.
And then Korea, I mean, South Korea has like, you know, amazing crime films lately. And great director.
Oh,
and
my God.
So I've been on this kick for like a year now, and it's insane.
That's great. That's great that you have the energy. I mean, part of my thing is like reading subtitles, which I love. I will not watch dubbed movies. I would rather not watch something than watch it dubbed. It's a little bit different for animation for me, but like, as far as like, but with like live action, it's like, I would much rather not watch something than watch it dubbed.
I learned Cantonese.
Yeah. have you learned some?
No.
Oh, I was wondering. No, you never know, that could happen.
No, it's funny. When I had kids, like I hadn't watched up until the pandemic, I hadn't watched one for years.
Yeah.
And then I started staying up a little later.
Yeah.
Which is hard, but it's tough.
Staying up a little later when you have kids is hard. You got to get up early, and that's great. No, but I mean, well, I love your stuff. I think you're great.
Thanks.
I think you're a great person. Thank you for including me in your book.
Thank you for letting me.
Hard ass. Are you kidding me? Somebody comes to you and is like, "Hey, I want to like use you as a kind of like a loose template for a character." I'm like, "Yeah." Like, come on. Like that, if that is my one claim to fame.
Yeah. And you've got Fabio drawing you, you know.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Great, you know? It's great. Funny because with Ryland, you know, I didn't even have a template for Ryland because I was like, well, Ryland just ended up being Ryland.
Yeah. Well, he's got the hat and everything and the glasses. Got,
I mean, it was just like, I was like, yeah, you know, if this actually happened in the real world, this is kind of like what Ryland would probably end up doing.
That's great. That's great. Well, anyway, I mean, the book is called Monster Matador, and go ahead and do the Afropocalypse, but you go to Kickstarter, you look up Monster Matador, that should come up, right?
Yeah. It's like an apocalypse, but in Africa.
Yeah. Well, and anyway, the creator is Stephen Prince. The book is Monster Matador. Afropocalypse.
Yes.
See, usually I get screwed up with people's names, but you screwed me up with the title this time.
Yeah. Let me talk about it real quick. So we've got the main book. We have a limited edition, limited signed edition. It's got a movie poster cover by Tony Donnelly.
Oh, that's right.
Tony is the artist of Albert Einstein Time Mason.
Love that cover.
And he did a really cool 60s inspired movie poster cover.
Yeah.
And that's going to come with a book plate. It's signed by me. It's signed by Ryland. It's signed by Tony. It's signed by Dave Schrader. And it's going to be signed by Christian Horn.
Oh yeah, that's right. I don't know why you would want my name on there, but yeah, I did
ask you.
That's right. I completely.
Well, you're in the book, Chris.
we have to do that. No, that's great. Yeah, well, it's not like I'm some like big star or something. It's just
you're so modest.
I'm so modest. Yeah. In any case, well, but yeah. I love this book. I enjoyed it, not just because I'm kind of in it, but I just loved it. I'm gonna have to start. I mean, I exercise regularly, but I'm going to have to start pumping some weights for the live action version.
You got to get your Monster Matador. It's like the people have the Marvel body. Now it's the Monster Matador body.
Monster Matador body. But yes, Monster Matador, Afropocalypse by Stephen Prince. Check it out. I guarantee.
Fabio Alves and Alexia.
Oh, yes, that's right. But I guarantee that you will love it. Especially if you love monsters, but if you love old action movies or current action movies or anything, Monster Matador, this is the book to check out. I loved it. I think it's great. Stephen Prince, I think you're great.
Thank you.
I think the podcast, the Part-Time Fanboy podcast, is great.
I think it's pretty great.
Yeah. I think Christian Horn, and just tolerable, but
yeah,
as
yeah.
you know, you know. But thank you for coming on. I really appreciate you always getting in touch with me and being like, I've got a book, and, you know, wanting to come on the podcast, because that means just as much to me as you putting me in it. So thank you so much.
Lately, it's like the only time we get the chance to actually chat. So
I know, it's ridiculous. We had thought to, like, we wanted to get together a couple weekends ago, and then it's just always something comes up. And for me, it's, you know, I mean, I won't get into it here, but you know why, because it's there's been other stuff going on with me. And but we do have to just get together, like, now that people are vaccinated and it's somewhat safe. So, you know, and hopefully we look forward to spending Pasadena Comic Con together. So, like, let's
You know, they haven't responded to me. So,
Really? Pasadena Comic Con, get on it. Respond.
I'm going to email them again right now.
Get on it. Well, in any case, this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. This is Stephen Prince. It is Monster Matador. Go to Kickstarter. Check it out. Throw your money at it. It's a great book. Thank you, as always, for listening. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.